It's time for the Hockey Writers Grindline, a weekly show covering everything Detroit Red Wings. Brought to you by our own iconic top line of Wings writers. Sit back and enjoy the grind.
Welcome to the Hockey Writers Grindline. I'm your host, Pat Brown, and joining me are my line mates, Devin Little and Kyle Knopp, and we are thrilled to have you join us for another show. Kyle, good to have you back after a stint on the long-term travel reserve. How are you doing?
Oh, it's great to be back, guys. Missed the last 2 weeks. I was away for a couple of weddings for family, and just excited to be back and with you guys this weekend.
Love having you back. We've certainly missed you. Past couple of weeks and hasn't been the same. So welcome back. And Devin, we all know you. You were here last week. So we're going to go ahead and dive right in because we have a lot to talk about today. And we're going to start with an oldie, but a goodie, one good, one bad. And I'll kick us off super quick. One good, my good from the week is the win over Edmonton. How much fun was that? Despite their best efforts of trying to give the game away, they hung on, and I actually felt bad for Namestnikov not getting the hat trick because it was there. It was there with the empty net. And you almost saw Sider apologize after he buried it.
Yeah, he gave him a look. It was like, I wanted to, but...
my super funny, right? So I was taping a show, Howlers and Growlers, when it started, and I go down, I turn on the TV, boom, breakaway, Edmonton scores. I watch the intermission. Within the first 30 seconds of the third, boom, McDavid scores. I turned it off, and then the Red Wings won. So maybe I was jinxing it. I just figured I'd share that story really quick. My one bad is the Red Wings power play, specifically yesterday against the Capitals. 5-on-3 for a minute 40, whatever. And I don't even know if they got a shot. They might have gotten a shot on goal, but my goodness, we were joking on Twitter about the guy in the arena yelling, shoot. Well, that was me at home yesterday. It was not good. The power play has been maybe slightly marginally better than last year, but overall just as frustrating, in my opinion, as last year, especially considering the firepower that we have on that power play. So in any case, those are my good and bad. Kyle, we've missed you, so we'll swing it over to you first. Take it away.
Yeah, my good from this past week is definitely that little three-game win streak that the Wings put together. You know, you talked about it last week on the show. I listened. I tuned in. about you were afraid they were going to kick off an 8-game losing streak for the third year in a row. And it looked like that after the Boston game almost, and for most of that Buffalo game. But they fought back. They got two goals late in that game and forced overtime and then won it with Sider's first goal of the season, which was a beauty. And so I think, you know, that was definitely that good. They really kind of took charge of that locker room and changed the momentum of the last week or two. And I thought that was excellent to see from this team. My bad was definitely the special teams overall, power play and penalty kill. And then, you know, I figured that's kind of the low hanging fruit. So I'm going to go a little bit above that and say just the defense in our defensive zone, like our defensive zone responsibility from our defensemen has been shaky at most and abysmal at worst. I mean, DeKeyser tried to pass one in to the net from the corner yesterday. I mean, it's just been awful. And so, I remember just going, ooh, when that happened.
I feel like he did that in his head as he was doing it and just couldn't grab it.
Yeah, it was one of those like slow motion, like, come back. But I mean, there was just multiple instances of that. And then, you already touched on it, that we need more shots. I mean, I think we had 9 shots over the final 2 periods, if that, yesterday's game, and that's just not going to cut it.
Nope. And especially after the Edmonton game, where it was very encouraging how they played and the shots, the offensive chances that they generated. And honestly, then that game was kind of played against them last night. So, Devin, you've got the last word, your observations, one good, one bad from the week that was.
Well, I'm going to kind of just pile on to a lot of what was already said, but my good is I'm going to highlight the play of the Red Wings top line and then the D pair of Nick Leddy and Philip Hronek against the Edmonton Oilers. Up until, like, you know, the third period, they basically held Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl silent. And that is very hard to do for any team. And by golly, these kids did it. It's very encouraging. And we talk about how Larkin specifically has to become that elite two-way center for him to really, you know, entrench himself as part of this team going into the future. And if he can go head to head with Connor McDavid and come out with basically a tie, I'm feeling pretty good about that.
Yeah.
Agreed. And then, my bad, I have a new joke that I'm going to start running with when it comes to the penalty kill. And that is more like, Doug, who the hell is going to fix this penalty kill? Because holy cow. And then also, like you said, Pat, the power play, especially last night against a rookie in his first game in the NHL. You got to pepper that kid, man.
Yeah.
And I do agree with you, Pat. It does look better. I feel like they're moving the puck around better than last year. But the puck's still not going in the net, and that's where it needs to end up.
The puck's not barely going to the net. And
exactly.
You know, and that's the problem.
Great.
Yeah, it's they definitely cycle
shots. Yeah.
They gain the zone. You know, they're gaining the zone. They're cycling the puck. But even somebody, and it's funny to say this about a 19-year-old, but even somebody like Sider, who plays with all the confidence in the world, is making one too many passes.
Yeah.
Yep. And he's quarterbacking the power play. Totally agree that it looks good. You got to shoot. Somebody has to shoot. So in any case, good stuff. We don't need to beat a dead horse because we've talked about it. I'm sure we'll talk about it again. But, you know, whatever we harp on usually seems to improve before the next episode. So we should have started with Zadina, I suppose. But instead, we'll go with the power play and see how that happens. Good stuff, guys. Good stuff. Up next, let's talk about the fact that the Red Wings are winning games. The Red Wings are over 500 at this stage in the season. It feels like it's been forever since they've been over 500. And I mean, it's nothing dramatic, 7-6-2 or whatever, but nothing crazy dramatic, but they're over 500, which is super encouraging and nice to see. Is this for real or do you expect them to regress? And Devin, we'll start with you this time.
So I think that this is for real, but maybe not in the way that, we're thinking here. I think that, you know, obviously we're through a little over an eighth of the season. Not a huge sample size by any means, but I do think we're starting to see some trends that I do think that are going to carry forward. And the trend that I'm thinking of in this sense is that they're going to be a team that just kind of hovers around 500. You're going to see three wins here and then four losses there and then four wins there and then three losses there. And it's all going to more or less even out. Mm-hmm. I think that that's kind of where this team is headed. I think that, you know, we've kind of talked about this a little bit over the last couple of weeks. Team has some talent now. Team is able to win games that they weren't able to win over the last couple of seasons, but they also don't have enough talent where they can overcome the best of the best. And they're still going to, make mistakes that we're just talking about, and they're still, you know, they're still liable to lose the bad game from time to time. We've seen it twice against Montreal already. So I think that this is for real in the sense that the team we're looking at right now on November 12th, 13th, whenever you're watching this episode, is this year's Red Wings team. And I think, you know, for what it's worth, I think it is an improvement on prior seasons.
Yeah, I don't think there's much like disputing that, especially they were able to stop the bleeding even on that losing streak, you know. Would much rather see a 3 or 4 game losing streak than an 8 game losing streak. That's what kills a season. Just ask the Coyotes. Like your season's done before you're even out of the gate.
Yeah.
So absolutely super good points. And one thing I want to remind everybody at home too, or in the car if you're driving, remember who's injured. Vrana, a major cornerstone piece of this offense, is injured, and we forget. And so the offense is performing remarkably well when you consider one of their top scoring threats hasn't even played yet this year and may not at all. We'll see how things shake out, but I know it's been unknown. Kyle, your thoughts on the Wings, what you've seen out of them. Is this for real?
Well, you make a fantastic point about missing Vrana and how that would immediately change the landscape of this team if you were out there, especially on the power play. But to go along with Devin's point, yes, this team's for real in the sense that they're 7-6-2 or whatever you said they were. I don't know exactly. But yeah, they're a game over 500 and that's where they're going to end up, right? They're going to end up right around 40 wins, probably about 85 to 90 points, depending on how many overtime losses we get. But, you know, it's really, they're a team that's going to hover right around 500, and that's where we thought they were going to be. So yeah, we're seeing what this team can bring on a night in, night out basis. And it can be from going toe to toe with the Oilers, who are one of the best in the league, and shutting down their top line and coming out ahead in a game in which they almost gave away. And it can also be a game in which they come out buzzing in the first 10 minutes, like against the Capitals. And then the Capitals find a way to, just shut everything down through the middle defensively, and then you can't get the top line going. So I think we're going to see a lot of those this year. There's going to be a lot of growing pains with this team, but they're going to hover right around the 500 mark throughout the season. So yes, this is the real team. This is what we have right now. We're still a few pieces away from being a legit contender. But I think in the sense of the season as a whole, they're real fun to watch. And that's something that we got to keep in mind as we, go through the rest of the season.
Yeah, I love what you said there at the end. They are fun to watch, and it's been a while since hockey has been fun to watch in Detroit. So that's a really good point. And I'm going to use that and kind of segue right here into our next topic, because, one of the things that we talked about before the season started was how rough the division was, right? You've got Stanley Cup runner-up, Stanley Cup champions. Well,
yep.
The Stanley Cup runner-up ain't looking so hot unless they're playing the Red Wings. but is that also because both games have been in Canada and the Red Wings have been out with without one of their top players in Tyler Bertuzzi, obviously because he cannot travel to Canada. So I'm going to give our friend Blake 1991 probably a little satisfaction here, because I'm going to sit here and eat crow for 1 second. Because I have said on multiple occasions, both in print and on this show, that Tyler Bertuzzi is expendable, he's replaceable, and you can deal him while his stock is high and get somebody else in to fill his role. I was wrong. I was 110% wrong. Now, I'm not always going to sit here and say he's always a first liner. Everybody kind of goes up and down. So me sending him down to the second line from time to time, I will stand by that. But overall, in terms of Tyler Bertuzzi and what he means to this Red Wings team, holy hell, guys, he means the world to this team. And it has become evident every time they've played in Canada and every time they get him back, and the difference that he has made. It, to me, just blows my mind the type of difference that he makes, because you don't think of Tyler Bertuzzi as one of your highly skilled players. You know, he's a grinder. He's a great player. And I mean, no disrespect, but you know, you're not exactly putting, you don't expect to see Bertuzzi dangling and everything else all the time. At least I don't. And man, you know, Kevin Allen said it best when we had him on the show eons ago, Bertuzzi's their courage. Mm-hmm. It's like when he's on the ice, the team just, they've got more courage. They've got a little more swagger. And he's a key component of this team. And I don't think anybody's untouchable, because this is Steve Yzerman we're talking about as GM. But I think Bertuzzi, in my opinion, is about as untouchable now as they come, at least just in my opinion, because my goodness, is he the X factor or what? So, all right, I'm off my soapbox. I had to eat a little crow. Tasted pretty delicious, actually, because basically that crow means Bertuzzi's a phenomenal player and an asset to the Wings. But curious what you guys think about this. So, Kyle, we'll start with you this time. Is Bertuzzi the Red Wings X factor, and is he untouchable?
Before I answer that, I'm going to answer your first theoretical question about what Montreal is doing against the Wings. Uh-huh. And I'll take responsibility for that, because I reached out to our Habs coverage team at the beginning of this year and really let them know about the last four times the Wings and Habs played each other prior to this season. And that certainly has backfired pretty hard. So I will eat the crow for that one. Sorry, everyone out there in Wings Nation. Hopefully
light them up in the comments. Light them up.
Let me know. Let me hear it.
Chris Chelios, Chris C is going to comment.
Oh man, we haven't heard from Chris C in a while. He must be on the road or something.
Say hi, Chris. Say hi.
But to get back to this question at hand, is Bertuzzi the X factor for the Wings right now? Yes. Did I think he was going to be, did I think that he was the type of player that could prove to be? No, I did not coming into the season. I think we all talked about it, how, he is the heart. He is the courage to this team. In a sense, we could see that last season, when he was gone after 9 games. I mean, they tumbled, you know, quite a bit throughout the, they stumbled throughout the season. And there are a lot of times when we're like, man, if only Bertuzzi was out there, this could be a different looking team. So yeah, I did give him some credit, but apparently not anywhere near the credit we needed to. And so to answer that, yes, he's the X factor this year and has certainly stepped up when we all thought it was going to be Verana. So it's great to see him playing that way. In terms of being untouchable, I'm only going to say yes because other teams aren't going to want to touch it. And we don't have to get into the reason why. I mean, we all know the reason why. He's the last player in the NHL to not be vaccinated. But are any teams that are really in a playoff hunt going to want to pick him up to go into a 7-game series in which he can only be in half of them if they have to go across the border?
Sure.
I don't think so. Or they're going to offer pennies on the dollar for what he's worth. And then we're going to lose someone that has been such an X factor because of just wanting to make a fourth round move, which I don't see happening. But so those are things to think about. So yes, he's the X factor. Do I think he's untouchable? No, but I don't think any other teams are going to want to touch him.
I think that's a really, really interesting point you raised about potentially, you know, after the deadline or whatever, having to look at the playoff series in Canada. Super, super interesting point there. Devin, bring us home on this one. Tyler Bertuzzi, is he the X factor and is he untouchable?
And just to really jump on Kyle's point here before it leaves my mind, I think that if Bertuzzi is traded at least this year, I'm of the belief that he's going to the Metro because there is no Canadian team in that division. Sure. So at the very least, you have him through the first two rounds of the playoffs. Now, I don't know if you'd want to deal him within the conference, but that's a whole nother thing we can talk about months from now.
Good news is, you know, the Maple Leafs won't make the conference final.
Exactly. yes, exactly. That's nothing to be said for the Canadian teams in the Eastern Division or Eastern Conference. Anyways, I love a good singer. Hi, Maple Leafs Lounge. How you doing? here's the thing. I guess I'll answer this question backwards. I don't think he's untouchable because, like you said, Pat, this is Steve Yzerman we're talking about, and he can pull a rabbit out of a hat like nothing else. If the right offer's there for Tyler Bertuzzi, I expect him to jump on it. It doesn't matter. And then also, like you, Kyle, said, there's just no one's lining up to pick that guy up if they're worried about, you know, potentially facing, you know, one of the Canadian teams. You know, the Edmonton Oilers are looking really good. They look like a contender in the West. Bertuzzi can't go up there. You know, no one's going to be trying to get him. So I just think it's just not the right, if you're going to move him, now's not the right time.
Sure.
And then as for whether or not he's the X factor, I hesitate to say yes. I also hesitate to say no. I hesitate to say yes because, you know, we've seen this team with him in the lineup against Boston and then even last night against Washington. And he was not very visible. I remember talking with you, Pat, I think last week about the Boston game where they didn't have Larkin, but they did have Bertuzzi and Raymond. Yep. And you were kind of thinking, all right, still have 2/3 of that line. They should be able to do something. Nope, they didn't do anything. When I think of an X factor, I think of like Ovechkin. I think of like Connor McDavid that can just out of nowhere, boom, your team's in the game. And I realize Bertuzzi's done that this season. He did that against the Sabres, I'm pretty sure, this past week.
Yeah.
But that's not something that he's known for. That's not like he hasn't built that reputation up. And it's not like he can't do it. I'm not counting it. I'm not counting him out in that regard. Right. But he's just not there yet for me.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And I guess by your logic, I just compared Bertuzzi to McDavid, and that was not that was certainly not my intent. And God, I hope I have to eat crow on that one too, because
that'd be crazy.
Tyler Bertuzzi, 200 point season.
I'd love it.
It'll be right up there with Adam Ernie's 50th goal of the year. So
there you go.
Good stuff. All right, I have
one thing I want to add to that. Sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
And it just because Devin, you're right to say that you're hesitant to actually call him the X Factor. And I just want to clarify why I am saying that he is. And to me, it was because of in the Boston game, and especially last night in the Capitals game, they focused on that line and they focused on shutting him down and frustrating him. Yep. And once that happened, you could tell the kind of life of the Detroit offense was gone. And Detroit did it to Connor McDavid last week, in which they eked out a win. And then they actually did it to Ovechkin last night as well. He had zero shots on net, zero shots, including on a 5-on-3. But the Capitals just found another way to win. And I was talking with a friend of mine out here in the DC area through text today. And, I said that was kind of a identity win for the Caps last night. They really had to find a way to win in other ways than just run and gun style. And I thought they did a really good job. It was their best defensive game all around, but it was because they shut down Bertuzzi and didn't allow him or that line, Raymond either, to really be the X factor. So that was why I was alluding to him being more of needing to be considered that.
A fair point. And just to round it out, that's why secondary scoring is so important, because how did the Red Wings beat the Oilers? Who scored two of those goals? Who scored the first two goals?
Vladdy Namestnikov.
Who saw that coming? Who had Namestnikov down for scoring the first two goals of that game? Obviously Lark's got one on he should be in jail for robbery. My goodness, what he did to that goalie.
That was beautiful.
But to your point, Kyle, yes, Bertuzzi was shut down and you got your secondary scoring, and that's how you win games.
Yep.
So
yeah, absolutely.
Really good stuff. Good discussion there, guys. I enjoyed that. Let's take a quick timeout. Thank you for watching our show. Give us a like, subscribe to the Hockey Writers channel. We have so much good stuff on here. We've got Blackhawks banter, Sabres scoop, chicks and sticks, Howlers and Growlers, Prospects Corner, Union Junction. And if you haven't checked out this week's Union Junction, they've got none other but the one and only Ken Cal. So you need to go over and check out Union Junction. Follow us on Twitter. Sign up for our morning skate newsletter. Get the best hockey news delivered right to you. We're on Spotify. We're on iHeartRadio. And, if we need to drive to Iowa and stage a crop circle with the team's latest box score so that you can see it on your flight to wherever you're heading, then we can do that. So just let us know.
are your Iowa State roots coming out? Just letting
absolutely. He's missing his cornfields.
Yes. Now I know what you guys do for fun over there.
that and cow tipping. But seriously, thanks for watching. We appreciate it. Shoot us a comment. You know how we roll by now. Speaking of comments, let's get to a few before we wrap the show today. So we will start from a good friend of the show here, Paradox Destroyer. Paradox asked, hi, Paradox. That's right. I was too busy looking at the question. Are Rasmussen and Veleno the future of the third and fourth lines? And that's not necessarily a respectfully connotation there. I think you can mix or max them. And I think that's a really good question. And I don't even know how to answer it. My answer would be as generic as can be and say, maybe. but in all honesty, I think Veleno definitely has what it takes to be a third or fourth line center. Rasmussen, as impressed as I was with him at the end of last year, I think he needs to do a little bit more to continue to earn a spot on a team and on one of those lines. It's early and I'm really not even trying to harp on him right now, because I think the season is young and he's got plenty of time to make an impact, but he needs to play better than he's playing right now for him to have a long-term impact on this team, even if it's as a role player. On third or fourth line or whatever it might be. So that's my take on it. Devin, your thoughts on Rasmussen and Veleno, and are they the part of the future of this team, basically?
Well, I'll start by saying that when you said, I don't even know how to answer this question, I thought you were going to say, and that's why I have Kyle and Devin here.
I
thought he was passing it off for sure.
I tried to contribute a little bit.
As for the question, I think at least short term, yeah. You know, Rasmussen's already on the team, so I think you can check that one. And then last week or whatever, I was talking about how Valeno should be on the team right now. So yeah, I definitely think that that could be at least they could be two of the centers for the near future. I wouldn't even write off the potential that Valeno could be a second line center in the future. I think right now that's maybe a little bit too high for him, but I think that he has that potential within him. So short term, yeah, I think you could easily go in and have Valeno as your third line center and Rasmussen as your fourth line center. I think that's actually a pretty decent setup. And then going forward, you'd like to see one or both of them maybe even raise their ceiling a little bit, but obviously you can't count on that.
Right. And like what I struggled with when going through this question is who they're bumping out of lines one and two potentially based on the future. So I think it's a super valid question. That was a good answer. Kyle, your thoughts on Rasmussen and Valeno and can they center the third and fourth lines in the future?
Well, yes and no. Valeno, yes. Rasmussen, no. So I think that Valeno definitely should already be looked at as the third line center this year. I think he needs to get more reps there. I think that's going to be where that's going to be his spot to lose probably in the next 2 to 3 years for sure. And then on the other side of that, Rasmussen, I think he's been playing well, but I think he should be a winger. And I think a lot of people are forgetting that we have a very good fourth line center right now in Mitchell Stevens. I mean, he's been playing really well. He eats minutes. He kills penalties. He's basically a much younger Glenn Denning, but not quite with the faceoff numbers you'd want. But he's getting there. And I think that, Rasmussen moving to a wing is kind of the play that needs to happen if he's going to continue to crack this lineup. But I think Valeno really needs to get more shots at the third line now.
Love it. Love it. And we're all certainly in agreement with Valeno. And I think we've kind of all been in lockstep on Valeno since before the season started. I think he was kind of the odd man out when Raymond retained the spot on the roster, which was stunning, and everybody expected, or at least I expected, I hope to see Valeno crack the lineup for opening day. But there was no turning back on that now either. Raymond's got plenty of games under his belt. He's not going anywhere. So we'll see how it plays out. But thanks as always, Paradox, for the question, and a super good one, a really good one. So all right, let's move on to Brandon Willis, who gave us a multiple choice question, which is kind of nice, kind of refreshing. So your options, pick the option, by the way, that you feel is most true. Nedeljkovic's hybrid style is more like Osgood's. Rasmussen's struggles are similar to what we saw with Riley Sheehan. Or Bert has been more filthy to this point than Cider. And by the way, there was a comment last week on Riley Sheehan and Rasmussen, their comparison. And the comment, I forget who put it, but the comment was something about, well, Rasmussen hasn't turned up on a police video in a Teletubby. And I lost it. Oh. I absolutely lost it. And that was just a fantastic comment. I applaud you, and well done. In my opinion, I think that is probably the statement that's most true. I don't liken Nedeljkovic to Osgood too much, to be honest. And maybe Bert being more, to me, that's a tough comparison, comparing Bertuzzi to Cider. One, a more veteran player to a rookie, and two, a forward to a defenseman. I think it's just tough. They've been good in their own way. And it's a valid question or a valid point, but I think just looking at it and the way Rasmussen has struggled to score goals, just like what Riley Sheehan kind of went through, that's the one that I would say is most true out of any of them. And it was great to see Riley Sheehan, by the way, with Seattle. He was here in Phoenix playing the Coyotes. And it was great to see him. So good stuff there. So, Devin, your thoughts on which one of those statements is most true?
Yeah, I kind of wish the last option was Bertuzzi has been more filthy than Raymond, because then I feel like we could have a fun conversation about that one. But like you said, Pat, I have a hard time comparing a forward to defenseman regardless of the situation.
Sure, sure.
I think I'm going to stick with the Rasmussen to Sheehan comparison. I actually really like that comparison for a number of reasons. Both being, you know, first round picks, first round centers that were kind of, at least at the time, picked to be, you know, maybe a second line center. And now it's looking like, you know, I mean, we know Sheehan's more of a bottom six center, and it looks like that's Rasmussen's kind of lane as well. And also, you know, obviously Little Caesars Arena isn't going anywhere anytime soon, but if this was its last year, you better believe that Michael Rasmussen would score not one, but the last two goals at that arena.
And that would be all he would do all year. That would be
exactly.
It. That would be exactly. The only goals he scores all
just year. Earlier, we talked about how he needs to, or he has to step up. That is when he would step up 1,000%. So yeah, I actually really like the Rasmussen-Sheehan comparison.
What a moment that was at the Joe. Yeah. That was fun for everybody. What a moment. Kyle, bring us home on this one. Which statement rings the most true?
Did Riley Sheehan score today? That was a Twitter account I used to follow, and every day they would just tweet no. Best Twitter account ever.
I love it.
Oh, man.
So when I first saw this question presented
they could,
to us.
They could have scheduled tweets on that. They don't even have
I think
to watch
they did.
Until that last game when they were like, oh, crap.
Oh, yeah. I gotta stop the press. Oh, man. So when I first read this question, when this question was first presented to us, I kind of wanted, you know, I wanted to cop out and take D, none of the above. Like you both said, I didn't really like the Sider Bertuzzi comparison. When I first read it, I was like, ooh, Sider Raymond or Bertuzzi Raymond. This is going to be, like Devin said, this is going to be interesting. And then I like reread it and I was like, oh wait, that doesn't really make sense. And I think the word filthy being used there doesn't give us much description to go off of what they're looking for us to compare either. Is it comparing goals? I mean, okay, Sider had one really filthy goal and then an empty net goal. So Bertuzzi's had a couple filthy goals and a couple, garbage goals in front, but that's what he's known for. So
maybe they're talking about personal hygiene.
Well,
it's the hair.
The Tiger's got such great flow, man. And it's like always nice. So I don't know. It's filthy good or bad here.
Is hockey filthy or hygiene filthy? I'm not sure.
So going back through, the one that definitely makes the most sense. I don't see a Ned Ozzie comparison really.
Sure.
I think Ozzie was a much different type of style.
For sure.
He was a true hybrid in the sense, and Ned's definitely a butterfly goalie. So there's two different styles there. So the Sheehan and the way that Devin presented everything, the Riley Sheehan, Michael Rasmussen comparisons, where they got drafted, what they were drafted for, the roles they're actually kind of falling into, you know, it's that comparison has got to be the most true to what we have right now. So, that's where I'm going to go with my answer. I don't know. I really enjoyed these questions. Like, please throw these multiple choice at us. This was really fun to kind of dive into. Yeah. But I think in terms of this one, the only one that really makes sense is B.
Brandon, thanks for the question. We appreciate it. And look forward to hearing from you this week. We got one more question before we call it a day. Cats Kulo Jackson asked, I like the all really good questions today.
Yeah.
Who's going to be the next player to go? That's a great, great question as well. My answers are going to be either, in my opinion, either Nick Leddy or Troy Stetcher. I don't think the Red Wings are going to be in a position to be pushing for a playoff spot once the deadline rolls around. Both players are in the last or only year of their contract, depending on how you're looking at it. Letty's a bit more expensive, but there's plenty of room for Detroit to retain all half of that salary if they want to for Letty's. And obviously Stetcher would be a super attractive option the way he's been playing for any team that's looking for defense heading into the playoffs. So in my opinion, and defensemen on this team, you know, you've got a lot in the pipeline when you're talking about Johansson and everything else. And I just think it makes more sense that a defenseman on the last year of their deal, without any sort of no movement clause, by the way, is probably the most likely to go. You could throw a Stall in there as well, I'm sure. But I just think if you're a playoff team looking to shore up that blue line, Letty or Stecher may be the way you go. So that's my opinion. I can't remember who we went to first last time. So Devin, we'll go to you next. Who is going to be the next Red Wing to peace out?
Well, I want to start just because you brought up somebody who I've been thinking about lately. I'm actually really curious to see what they're going to do with Nick Leddy going forward, because I think he's fit in really, really well.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And yeah. I, you know, when they brought him in, one of my very first thoughts about it was, okay, there's a trading asset for next season. But now I wonder if maybe they're going to be tossed around the idea of maybe giving him a extension, because he has looked well, good with his team, and he's he's not old enough to where that's not an asinine thing to suggest. Like he could be a part of this team for the near future at least,
and there's space to sign him.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's some logic behind it. I still think, you know, it depends on what's out there come trade deadline time, but hey, that's neither here nor there right now. I think that your brother last week brought up a really interesting point that I
don't give him any credit.
I got to do it, Pat. I'm sorry. he mentioned how he doesn't think that Eisenman's done moving out the Ken Holland folk. And I think that there is some merit to that. You know, we were just talking about Bertuzzi. I think that if situations were different, I think he would be out there. I mean, we were talking about this during this past offseason where he might be on the move. So I still haven't quite buried that idea yet. I wonder about, you know, more recently because of his time in the press box. I wonder if maybe a guy like Philip Hronek could be on the move in the future.
Sure.
I wonder if, you know, he's one of those young pieces that you could flip to get another young piece at another position that you could do. You know, I don't know. I'm not predicting he's the next one to go, but I think he's a name to watch, especially because of his thing with Blashill. And then real quick, I want to end this, my little part on this, this question with this. If you are on board the trade Philip Zadina train, you are on that train way too soon.
Now, I'm and not Devin, saying, you know a thing or two about train conducting.
I do know. I do. I know about slowing them down. I know about putting them all. I know what you need. I know about full speed ahead. I know all that thing. If you follow me on Twitter, which...
You should.
Earlier this week, I took a look. I compared Zadina to Vrana, who were just talking about earlier in the show about how this team is missing him. It's missing his offense. We were expecting him to be a 30 goal scorer for this team. Through their first 99 games, Jacob Vrana had 17 goals. Philip Zadina had 17 goals. Vrana had 34 points. Philip Zadina had 43 points.
I love that stat.
Philip Zadina is doing better through his first 99 games than Jakub Vrana did. I'm not jumping off the Zadina hype train quite yet. Does he need to get some pucks in the back of the net? Absolutely. And
he said he was going to do that.
Exactly. and that's part of the problem is that he said he was going to do it.
You're exactly right.
The goals will come. He knows he needs to score. It's just
absolutely
you do not want to trade. You don't want to have some buyer's remorse or some seller's remorse where you trade this guy too soon and then he explodes with his next team. So give it time.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Kyle, we are coming up on time. So I'm going to ask you to keep it short and sweet. But who is the next player to be 86th out of Detroit?
I mean, you both brought up plenty of good names and reasons why they might be the next out the door. And I have to say, I agree with a lot of those points. I think, Devin, you're right. I think Letty might end up being a key to this team moving forward, at least for another season. I did coming into this year, I was like, okay, Letty's here. We're going to flip him for sure. Now I think it's probably going to be more likely Stall, Stecher, or even Hronek at the deadline. I could see Stecher maybe even getting moved before the deadline. I feel like he thinks he needs to be playing more. And I could see an opportunity where a team that's kind of getting depleted on defense or needs a right-handed puck moving defenseman could reach out and look for something. And we might be able to get a couple extra nickels on the dollar for him because of what they need. And, you know, us being like, yeah, we can make that work. But, So to answer this question, to keep it short, I'm going to say Troy Stetcher is going to be the first and next Detroit Red Wing gone.
I think that's fair. And just one more point with the Hronek comment. Yeah, why do we need him anymore? Sider scored an empty netter, so we know we've got defensemen who can score empty netters. So he's gone. I like it.
One other point, and
yeah.
Because you cut me off and made me go really short, so thanks, Devin.
Oh, blame me. Hardy. I would actually, you can blame me, because that's what happens when the host actually gives his two cents.
Does something and doesn't keep pushing out. That's what I had to do when I was hosting for you. So.
But anyway, I can also that's our show. Kyle doesn't get to talk. No, I'm kidding. See what I could do there? Sorry, Kyle, go.
Too much power to your head. So before we get completely off the rails.
Too bad we don't have outro music. We just have intro music.
Like, start hearing it. Producer says we're done.
The band queuing up.
I am sorry for everyone at home right now. I just wanted to make the quick point that Simon Edvinson is over in SHL doing everything that Sider was doing last year at the same age. And if that is any indication, he might be ready for this team next season, in which case having a player like Letty around to kind of be the mentor for both of them, and then, you know, shipping out hopefully to Kaiser and hopefully, you know, maybe stall at the deadline. I think that will really, really, really shore up that defensive end for the Wings.
Yep. I think that's all really good stuff. Thanks for the question, Cats, Kulo, Jackson, and everybody who's commented. We appreciate the questions. Yes. We love that you watch and that you comment, and we love interacting with you. That's our show. We, again, want to thank you for joining us. Give us a like, subscribe, comment, share. We want to hear from you. So tweet us at THW Grindline. Don't forget to sign up for our morning newsletter, Morning Skate. Don't forget to join our Discord server where you can join and talk to us live during games or whenever you want. And that's about it. So thanks again, and we will see you next time.